Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut, and I'm recording on Tuesday night, May the 21st, in week 9 is where we're at here in the fantasy baseball season, about 30% of the way there. My co-host, Jason Anthony, is he's jet-setting, a busy man around the world doing things in his lay of the land, in his world of business. And so I'm joined today by two special guests. They'll be on separately. The second one will be a surprise a little bit later. I think you'll enjoy it, but you'll also enjoy this first one. He is a colleague of mine at FTN Fantasy. He's a longtime high stakes NFBC player, and he's the author of the very famous, fun, and popular Whitestone's Waiver Watch. Ladies and gentlemen, Todd Whitestone. Hey, Todd.
Thanks for having me, Vlad. I really appreciate it.
I wanted to first just mention, as we were talking before the show, how you are kind of living the dream. 30 plus years in the finance industry, grinding, right? And now you're retired, you get to spend time with your family, and you get to give as much attention as possible to your high-stakes teams, right?
That's right. That's right. I can't complain that I don't have enough time when I make a mistake. That's the only problem. But it's really fun, and I'm enjoying it. I'm trying not to add to the number of teams, Vlad, because, that is a losing battle when you have too many fab teams.
It really is. There's an absolute case of diminishing returns. I know for myself, like the online championships, my sweet spot's 5. I mean, if I start adding any more, the teams just aren't getting the attention they deserve. And yeah, I've got 10 in all, and it's just, I always tell myself I'm going to play less, but it doesn't happen. What can I say? I love Fab. I'm a Fab animal.
Yeah, I try to keep myself to 10. This year, I do have 10. One is a draft champions, because of the CLQ concept. So that reduces it to 9. So it's not too bad, but it certainly keeps you busy. I mean, Sundays, even with 9 fab teams, are quite crazy.
Well, let me ask you this. I know that you are friends with a friend of mine, former colleague of mine when I used to work at RotoWire, and that's prospect master James Anderson. You guys have been co-managing NFBC main event teams for quite some time now, and I was just curious, like, kind of how that works out, like who's in charge, who's more on the fab side, the draft side, how you guys handle prospects, things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you got to divide it up somehow, but for us, it's sort of gotten smoother over the last few years. So what happens, Vlad, is I'm kind of in charge of the fab up to a point. Like, I sort of set up the fab and who we're dropping and the order, initial order anyway, of the waterfalls that we have. And then we have a quick discussion and James tells me what he thinks, and we usually move things around. And I like to create the fab with only $1 on each player. I don't put the different dollar amounts until the end. And so we discuss that as well. But what James does is he is in charge of all the lineup setting. So he does it Mondays and Thursdays, and he does a great job with that. So that's one less thing I have to do. So I'm more focused on sort of, I tell him I'm the general manager and he's the manager on the dugout. Mm-hmm. So it works out pretty well. We've done well as a team, and actually recently better as a team than we have individually. I think it's because, we have somebody to bounce off of, as opposed to on your individual teams, you're monkeying with it and you're doing stuff that really even you would say, oh, geez, I shouldn't have done that. So it works out well. We've had a lot of success, especially last year.
That's fantastic. And on the prospect side, because James is one of the rare people that doesn't love every prospect. He's actually a prospect hater. Okay, I don't know. Okay, that's too much. That's not quite the case. Right, yeah. But, But what I mean is, like, for example, someone might call, might say I'm a Dodger homer or something, but it's not the case. I'm actually even harsher, I feel like, on my Dodgers. I mean, well, it's hard to be. I mean, there's no reason to be harsh on a guy like Mookie Betts or Shohei Ohtani. I mean, sure, just know their first round picks, whatnot. But because I'm so in tune, I just see the, you know, the little trends and the idiosyncrasies. I mean, for a long time, like, no matter what, I just couldn't get into Jock Peterson. There was just something about his, at the time when he was with the Dodgers, it was just like, you know, a little lazy or this or that. Just, you know, my local teams, I just kind of know them more. It's a kind of an issue I had with Ryan Weathers for a little bit in San Diego, just, you know, knowing local people there and their thoughts on him and work ethic and stuff like that. That obviously doesn't look like an issue here, but how, I think that was a too long of an intro setup for the question here.
Well, but you're right. James is very, I call him realistic. I don't think he's down on prospects, but, you know, when he's got his sort of redraft hat on, not dynasty, then he will tell me what he thinks. And usually I'm the guy pushing for, especially a prospect that he's high on, but sometimes he's high on them because, you know, in 2 or 3 years, they're going to be great. Which doesn't really help us if we're, you know, drafting them early or trying to fab them. I've learned how to read James. I think that's the best thing I can say, Vlad, is early on, I didn't really know when he was less aggressive, you know, how to read it. And so usually when I have an idea, if James likes it, he'll tell me very directly. If he doesn't like it, he'll be quiet.
Yeah.
So I know that he's not saying anything. And that means that it could be a pretty dumb idea usually. So anyway, it works out well. He's a great resource. If I have a question, I try not to overdo that and ask him every little thing, but he helps a lot. And he just, you know, he's watching these guys. I some of these guys I haven't seen until they're up in the majors, and he's watched tape of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And so as far as your article is concerned, so it started many years ago on Michael Simeone's site, right?
Right.
On SB Streamer. Yep. And I picked you up from syndication. I called you a couple years ago. I said, hey, Todd, I would love if you would do your article here. You obliged. Mm-hmm. And here we are in the second year of Whitestone's Waiver Watch. And it's a very unique article. First of all, the benefits of it, right? The number one benefit of it is it's free. So whether you're a subscriber or not, you can log in and you can see what is going on in the main event. And it's everything. And that's why I love it. I love the way it's structured, because you're talking about, you know, the highlighting the biggest bids of the week, how the actual players themselves, the fantasy managers, the people behind them are doing, you know, looking at the, you know, the bid details, looking at some trends of the season. So I really love that whole element of it. It's just like a very fun read. You got some of your GIFs in there mixed in. And some historical fab data there as well. So it's fantastic. So we're about 30% of the way through the season, about 45, 47 games. And I'm curious, I'm looking and noticing in your latest column, you mentioned, you specifically pointed out the lower number of the average fantasy manager in main events. They have a lot less money than they did last year. Mm-hmm. It's like 460 on average left. Right. Is it 460 left or 460?
460 is the total spend so far. They have 540 left on average.
Got it. And this time last year, they had spent 594. And we obviously know a lot of that has to do with all those wonderful starting pitchers that came in, the Bobby Millers, Tanner Bibees of the world. But it's a little bit different landscape this year. It feels like pitching is a little bit more settled.
Yeah, I mean, there haven't been the big hot rookies so much. I mean, Christian Scott was a big bid, but there haven't been as many. If you compare the last 2 years, I've been doing this for 4 years now. Last year was the highest bidding amount, and this year is the lowest. So it's pretty stark. I don't know. I think part of it is managers have decided to hold back a little. I don't think it's totally based on the fact that rookies haven't come up, But I think there's a little bit more of an effort. I mean, the main event community, there's 855 teams, but there's a lot of multiple owners having multiple teams. So the community is pretty, I mean, I don't want to say tight, but it tends to move in sort of one direction. And I feel like people are holding back sort of purposefully. Mm-hmm. It's going to change because people want to spend their money. They're going to be in fifth to seventh place, and they're going to want to move up and see somebody. But for right now, I think everybody's making an effort to sort of hold back a bit and maybe see if they can pick up somebody later on.
Let me ask you your opinion on something. I know that you read my Fab article on the weekends. Have you noticed am I going into like old man status where I'm pretty much like negative and super conservative on all the bids, like telling everyone to save their money? That's how I feel like I've been, like, just, you know, hey, this guy's not worth it. Don't spend so much, you know, save it for your waterfall.
You're having an effect on the market in part, Vlad, because I mean, people are not spending as much. I think, you know, you're not sort of gushing over these guys. And I do think people are sort of reading that and saying, okay, I was going to go heavy, but I'll pull back. They're waiting for you and others to give them sort of the green light that this is a real find. I don't think you're off base with the market at all. I think your numbers, when I've had a guy that I've tried to fab, your numbers have been pretty accurate in terms of the ranges you're giving out for 15 and 12 team leagues. And those are very helpful, by the way, that you provide those.
And looking at the batch of most added players in main events, by the way, those that don't know, the NFBC main event is, it's a $1,750 entry. They're 15 team league standard 5x5 roto. It's been going on for 20 plus years. We draft these, a lot of them live in Vegas. Some are drafted online as well. And I know each of us have at least three teams. And so looking at the groups here, the highest, the first is Luis Matos of the San Francisco Giants. His average winning amount was $95. And that obviously, I mean, that was, it was pretty obvious the way that was soaring. So when I first started writing the article on Friday, and he had a nice little, you know, first series, and then what he did the next couple of days was just insane. And you just knew there was no way to keep up with it. You knew we were going to start seeing 100 plus bids, and we almost got there on an average price. So you got him, Luke Rayleigh, who actually, you know, it's one of those things. It's one of the one things, I think one little talents that I have is kind of being able to get a feel for a heater when it's coming on. And that's more easy to do with a guy like Luke Rayleigh. We saw exactly last year, and there's a lot of players that kind of fit that prototype where you just kind of see where things are headed. Okay, he was ice cold for a month. Okay, a hit here, stolen base, getting on base. And then it just escalates. You know, we're going to talk to our next guest a little bit about a certain angel. Maybe that's a little giveaway there. But an angel that's been red hot. And I feel like we need to, like, get ahead of these guys, right? Like,
right.
I mean, I'm sure some people drop Jordan Beck, right, for a while. And you start to see him heating up. And I feel like timing of when these things happen during the week matter a lot, right? If somebody did something on the weekend, that's it. Their prices are shooting up.
Yep. You got to, I mean, the key to the whole thing is catching what I call the turn. When does this guy change from being a platoon player to a full-timer? And maybe he's showing skills that, you know, he wasn't showing before. And I think Rayleigh fits into that category. I think he's playing pretty much every day now. And unless he really cools off, I don't think he's going to be sitting back down because they need him. That team needs him to be provide some offense. And Matos has talent. You know, I think he's underperformed in the past, but, you know, he has a chance to be full-timer as well. And that's when you should spend more. And so I think that's where you see those average bids become higher.
And we're dealing with a lot of sharp folks. You mentioned a lot of people have multiple teams. Like, these are not easy leagues. And you really can't rest on your laurels. Like, you can't, you know, I mean, even if you're not if you don't have two good catchers and you're continuously streaming that second spot, you really got to spend the time and dig into it. It's like, okay, you know, I kind of went on a wing and a prayer with Jake Rogers that last week for a buck. It didn't work out, but I mean, it's just, it didn't feel good because missed out on like a David Fry, for example, who also was trending and starting to heat up. And at first he was just hitting against lefties. Now he's, you know, even a part-time David Fry is better than like, you know, like a 35% strikeout rate, Jake Rogers, you know?
Sure. I mean, he might have a good week, a guy like Rogers. And then if you hold on to him too long, you've sort of depleted any value you got from that first week. So it's a big question about, do you try to stick with your catcher? I mean, we have Bo Naylor on one team and he's been really disappointing, but if you get into the churning the catcher mode, there's no guarantees you're going to do better just because the guy was hot the week before.
And I feel like the name of the game in the preseason, it's obviously avoiding the landmines. And of course you're looking for the, who the market is heavily underpriced, right? And then during the season, a big part of the game is the streaming, and it's just being ahead of these sharp players that you're playing against. So things like noticing, oh, wait, Alec Burleson's playing every day and hitting. Jake Meyer's playing every day, hitting. You know, and same thing with like Kevin Pillar. You get a great week out of him and you figure, it's just not going to happen. But hey, it's worth getting cheap for a few dollars, see what happens. Right. And so you're not having to pay whatever, the 30, 40. And then like, he's still available, what, in like 30% of leagues. A lot of people still don't believe. Right. Well, guess what? You know, next week is going to be 50 plus, and then you already kind of missed that.
Then time. You missed it, right? Like Jake Meyers, I'm worried about his playing time because McCormick's coming back and they still have Loprovito on the roster. So I'm not sure he's going to be playing if he starts. I mean, he's hitting 500 over the last few weeks, so he will still play, of course, but if he cools off, I'm not sure he's going to be getting the everyday playing time. And that's so if you spent last week, it's sort of questionable. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but that's the question you have to answer, I think.
Yeah, it's a game of ebbs and flows, and you just got to be on top of it. You got to be ahead of it. Before we head out, I know it's around midnight your time. And wanted to ask you about a couple of players that we're going to be looking at in the coming week. So for example, like, Otto Lopez, Willie Calhoun. I mean, right. I was shocked how well Willie Calhoun has been doing.
I know.
At least just getting on base, getting hits, but nobody cares. It seems, and being utility only, I think hurts. If you have Ozuna, you have Ohtani, right, it doesn't help you. And then like Otto Lopez here with the playing time with now, Tim Anderson's coming back, who I think stinks now at this point. Vidal Bruján is there. So now they have a little pickle there. How do you see those situations working out this week?
I mean, I think this week Calhoun would be a good start, in my opinion. Lopez, I'm not as high on because I think Anderson, isn't he back this week? He's already back. So, and I think they might just play him against lefties, Vlad. So that would not be that helpful. He does have speed, but he's never really hit for a great average in the minors before. So I'm not as high on his outlook past another week or so. I don't know his schedule, to be honest, but Calhoun could carve out something because the Angels do need people. Mm-hmm. And if he's going to still, you know, he's not a great defender, but if he can play DH, then I think that would be great. And so I would consider him next weekend.
Thank you so much, Todd, for coming on. Any last, anything else you want to mention here?
Yeah, I do have one thing I wanted to just mention as a sort of a tip for those people listening, because I do a lot of fab work and detail it in my article, the overall fab that people have left. A very simple thing that you can do is total up the fab in your particular league and see where you stand there. I mean, people scan it, but if you put a little spreadsheet together and add all the fab remaining for all your competitors, then you can see, am I on track? Am I about average? Because some leagues have spent a lot of money and you might still be fine. And some leagues have spent very little and you might think you're okay and you're still sort of behind the eight ball and might need to conserve. So you don't have to do this every week, but I do it from time to time. And I think it's better than just going off the averages of the main event because who knows, your league might be a bit different than the others.
Now that's fantastic advice. Todd, love having you on the team and having your article come out. It comes out every Monday. Right. Todd, we'll have you back on again, and greatly appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much, Todd.
Thank you, Vlad. Good to talk to you.
You as well. All right. So here we go. A real quick letting you know about our sponsor, Underdog. If you want to make money, making picks on MLB games, then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball player and predict whether they'll go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code FTN, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100, so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with the promo code FTN and get that first deposit doubled up to $100. You must be 18 or older, 19 plus in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. And in Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789. Part two of this episode here of the FTN Fantasy Podcast. I'm Vlad Sedler, and I'm joined by actually my favorite guest. I love talking to this man. He is incredibly, what's the word I'm looking for? He can be polarizing sometimes, you know, sometimes I hear comments like, man, this guy thinks he knows it all, but he knows a lot. And the way that he speaks and delivers, I absolutely love it. I love having him on. He's a main event player. He's a really good one. He's a Southern California guy originally, because he's the biggest Angel fan I know. And I don't know if that's a good thing or not. He is very surly, and he's at Surly Attorney on Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Prepas. Dan, what's going on, man?
Thanks, Vlad. Thanks for you're always too nice with your welcomes, but always appreciated, man. Thank you.
Yeah, dude. So you are, I don't know if you can, speak to your whereabouts, but you are not on the West Coast. You're like in,
I am in Boaz, Alabama, which is absolutely beautiful, country out here. Never been before.
Awesome. Awesome. That sounds good. And probably some good eats while you're out there as well.
Yeah. Surprisingly good Mexican food on a lakefront, amazing seafood, shrimp, scallops. Man. Yeah. No complaints.
You know what? LA is nice and all. A lot of people might be listening and say, oh, LA sucks, but there's just a lot I'm missing out on in the world. I feel like there's just so much going on. Anytime I like go somewhere, I went on a work trip to Prague last year, you just kind of feel alive when you're just out of your day-to-day environment and you just see something new, you just see new perspectives in life. And I love it. I don't know if that helps you with your perspective on the Angels at all, but I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, It's a train wreck that I keep thinking that the wreck is over and done with, but it somehow finds new ways to metastasize and wreck more. it's almost a pattern now. Like, hey, let's get our hopes up. Okay, let's not. Okay, we're just rebuilding, but this is really bad even by those standards. So I mean, it just seems to get worse and worse and worse. It's comical. It really is.
Well, I mean, there are bright sides. You have the nice little streak from Taylor Ward. You got Kevin Pillar, like I think literally the hottest hitter in baseball the last 2 weeks. Actually, let's start there. What is your overall opinion, like the flow of where things go? Like, where do you know, someone asked, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see Kevin Pillar in a month and then like at the end of the season?
I mean, I have absolutely no idea what to expect from him other than he looks sensational. You know, he's hitting line drives nearly half the time, and he had another home run tonight. I think everybody assumed it was going to be over. I know in my ultimate, I lost Luis Matos by $1, which was really nice to see. It's always the best feeling. But the backup, I bid 26 for Pillar, and I think the backup was like $3 or $4. So I don't think anybody believed that it was going to be for real. It's literally a day by day thing, but it's one hell of a bright spot. I'll put it that way.
And I mean, just in general, I know you heard a little bit of what Todd and I were talking about, but like a big part of the in-season grind in the streaming is getting in on the right on players at the right time. And I mean, Willie Calhoun, for example, like when I was looking in Fab last weekend, I was like, okay, wait, keeps moving up in the lineup. He's now hitting against lefties and righties, and he's continuously making contact, and it's just something new here. And, you know, we have to kind of leave our biases and previous thoughts at the door and be willing to accept something as new. And so, and Kevin Pillar is interesting because everything that you see, it's like he's 35, he was just cut by the White Sox, blah, blah, blah. But you can't argue with the fact of what he's been doing. And of course, you don't want to be caught holding the bag like when it starts to kind of taper off. But like, how come everybody was just out? Like, I had no idea where the bid ranges were going to be, but I kind of had a feeling I was going to be able to get Kevin Pillar, like put him in some like third, fourth conditional and get him for like in the teens or even single digits. That's kind of what happened.
I mean, you know, he's got a pretty consistent track record. You've got nothing to go on or a reason to believe there's anything to change. So, I mean, that's totally reasonable. People wouldn't buy in. But I think to your point of people, I think, are so concerned about overreacting and whether they think that they're going to feel bad about themselves or someone's going to make fun of them indirectly, or they'll take something to heart. Somebody saying, look at so-and-so blew something on Fab, that maybe that sets in a bias that people like, oh, that's interesting. No, I'm not going to look at it. That guy's nothing. I'm not going to go there kind of thing. So I do think that there's something to people worried about overreacting and not reacting to everything. So I think a better question is, are you sure you're not underreacting to something? Because if you're going to get a week ahead, you kind of have to react to everything. You have to read into everything. I mean, use an example of Nick Senzel. You know, he hit one home run when he came back, right? Most people are like, it's Nick Senzel. He hasn't done anything. He's hurt. The average is low. There's no reason I'm going to read into anything. And then he hit four home runs the next week, and it's been pretty much nothing since. So you kind of have to react to every little thing. Hope you get lucky. I mean, that's kind of how I'm not trying to oversimplify it, but that's kind of how I'm starting to see it on those guys.
Yeah, it makes sense. And of course, when you're spending single digits, teens, or even 20s, these guys are, it's fine if they are rentals, if you're kind of, you know, burning and churning in the right way. And also, how, you know, how super important it is, at least for me over the last couple of years, how much time and attention, like I'm spending hours on this stuff, like resetting my waterfalls, like the order of which I'm putting a Rayleigh and a Pillar and whatever. If I don't get this guy, you know, who am I going to get next? Oh, how many lefties or righties are they facing? What's their schedule the following week? How long am I going to potentially hold them? And yeah, I mean, sometimes you do get lucky. I mean, I literally, same thing happened to me with Luis Matos for whatever reason, 2 weeks ago, before he really started to get it going, I had him in my waterfall and ahead of Helio Ramos. Just to me, it was just clear, like, you know, if I want to get him at all cheap, now is the time to get him. I left him for a dollar. I missed out on the first three guys and he landed to me. And I played him that week, and it's just phenomenal. It feels so good, but that's so lucky. And he's never going to have 16 RBI in a week again. Maybe even in the next like 3 months, he may not have 16 RBI. Who the heck knows? But like, those feel good. Those are the big wins. And it kind of makes up for like a, you know, hey, I spent 180 on Victor Scott, even though I didn't really like him type of stuff.
You know, that's exactly what I spent on him, and it didn't work out. So I don't know if you were channeling the
no, it was me. On that
one. I did it too. Same.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. I had the, what was funny about mine is I had him and I got lucky and grabbed Victor Scott. Jason Foley before week one. And I remember thinking right after that period, Victor Scott got called up and I'm like, I'm such an idiot. What the heck was I thinking going for some random spec of Jason Foley when Victor Scott now could be a 90 steal or a better version of Estuary Ruiz? So I kind of chased a win. I snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. And even though I got Foley, I made sure to chase back and lose 180 on Victor Scott. So,
yeah, that Foley one felt good. I mean, so I had a little bit of closer. I had more closer luck this season than I really ever had before. In general, like the common theme of all my teams are my pitching's outstanding. Like I really am getting, I'm just like as much as I can get at a Ronaldo Lopez. I'm not expecting him to fully fall off, but it's not going to be under two ERA good. You can just tell, you just know. Garrett Crochet is not going to be pitching the full season. He may not be getting blasted, but at some point he might have like a phantom IL stent or cut, you know, whatever. But like, couple that with like good pitching decisions early, I feel good with it. The other part of that theme is the closer's been good, like mostly like Munoz, Phillips, even though he's on IL, picked up Kirby Yates at the right time. And you know, and before the season, or if you recall in my, you know, closer articles and all the stuff, I was like a big Foley over Lang guy. And so there was a shot.
I remember that.
And I did the same.
I've been in drafts with you where you took Foley, and I go, he keeps taking Foley over and over again. So yeah, sorry. Didn't mean to cut
you off. Well, the thing is, so it was that, and then Ginkle, who I was just convinced was just, I don't know. This is great because you're great for like psychology type episodes. So I consciously realized that I was now rooting for Ginkle to, because I got him as my 30th, and then Sewald got hurt at just like the right time. I was like, oh, that's it. He's like my guy. This is like destiny, but that's not the way it works. And so I started arguing online about like, no, Ginkle's better than Sewald. That's not going to happen. And then Ginkle started kind of blowing it, losing it. It's just like, it's so humbling. We just know, like, we know nothing. Some of us know more than others, or get luckier than others, or work harder. But like, at the end of the day, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in the league next week.
No, I mean, it also makes us, you know, it is a game of instant gratification, right? I mean, we get it from the drafts, we get it from the daily scores, more so than other season longs, because you get it every single day. You know, we have withdrawals. We have withdrawals when it's Thursday at like 5 p.m. and they're like, what are we going to do? There's like one game left and I don't even have anybody on any of the teams. This isn't acceptable. You know, I mean, that's how we are with that. So, I mean, we feel the same way when we miss somebody, and no matter how many good moves we make, we're always focused on, I missed out on that guy. You know, it doesn't matter. I got these right, but I missed on that one. And somebody will go nameless, but somebody else that plays in the NFBC was texting me, screaming at me as to why didn't I tell him to draft more Imanaga? You know, why didn't we draft more Imanaga? And I said, look, it shows that your priority should be elsewhere, because you're not being rewarded with any Imanaga. It would be too much of a good thing if you had him as well as everybody else. So,
all the Imanaga in the world isn't going to help my hitting. You know what I mean? And that was the last part of my theme, is like, the pitching is outstanding, but if I'm already tops in ERA, and hey, I got another good Crochet start. Hey, John Gray didn't kill me. Oh, another Glasnow gem. That's great. My ERA in ratio and WHIP now have a nice cushion, which will, you know, get washed away a little bit over time. But what about my hitters? You know, like it's crazy. I think a lot of people are in the same boat where, you know, we're all different. Like, obviously some people have more hitter standings points, but yeah, that's kind of a theme right now for my teams. It's like, well, you know, come on guys, let's go, wake up. Where are all my Gleyber Torreses, Michael Harris the second? It's like, yeah, I just feel like they're going to get going at some point, but we're going to talk about some of them later too.
Yeah, sir. The one thing I did want to mention, which feels pretty good about better lucky than good, is I was very worried about my starters in my one main, because I basically don't have anybody on the bench. Everybody's got on IL, and Christian Javier was dropped. And I thought to myself, you know, I saw that prior start and I'm like, just like everybody else, you know, I claim to not be a lemming. I'm probably the worst lemming of them all. I'm like, ooh, Christian Javier, you know, he had that breakout year. He's back. And I bid 192 thinking, you know, this is the kind of guy, nobody's going to go 200. Everybody likes to fall into that 180, 170 if they're going to go high 100s. So that was my psychology behind the 190. And I wasn't even close. You know, I lost to a 330 bid, and not saying anything against, you know, the person that bid, probably better than me, but it definitely felt good to see that line after almost losing another 200.
I mean, it's like the unwritten, I'm not going to go out on Twitter and like root against somebody, but like, I mean, listen, I have no Pablo Lopez, and sorry, earmuffs if you do and you love him and everything. Like, I wasn't crying over the fact that he gave up all those runs. I mean, you know how it is. We're competitive.
Yeah. I'm definitely a fantasy Schadenfreude connoisseur. I'll put it that way.
Some more Angels here I wanted to mention. I've been really on this Luis Renjifo train. There was just that spark, you know, some of the stuff we saw last year. with a little bit of the increase in power. Now this year, all of a sudden, he's running every time he's on base, even if he's getting caught stealing. Ron Washington's going to let him keep running. And we haven't even gotten to the Renjifo leadoff against lefties part of mm-hmm. the season. And you know that's coming at some point.
Yep.
And you layer that with the multi-position eligibility and just like, you know, just Ron Washington there. Like, man, I like him a lot. He's on a couple of my very important teams. And I think he's kind of underrated. I hope he keeps crushing.
I mean, anybody that's followed the Angels and anybody that, you know, followed that trade, I think it was the Angels got Renjifo and Sandoval for Crone. I don't know if I have that right, but I think that's what the trade was.
The CJ Crone deal, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I might be wrong. But man, I mean, he's always had this skills, the tools, the power, kept getting better. He became a lefty killer. And weirdly, he, you know, I think it was the injury. I think, I don't know. I was looking for an explanation as to why they weren't giving him more PT early, because I know he had problems off and on in the hamstring in spring mm-hmm. training. But man, he's just never really been given the full shot. And the more ABs he gets, the better he gets. And if he's got a green light to steal, I mean, at this point, I think that people are still not properly valuing the steals upside of the Angels. That is not going to change. It's not going to be affected by the success rate, to your point. That, I mean, it's a slam dunk. If there's an Angels player on the wire that steals a little bit and you're desperate, spec there. Don't try to grab somebody that, you know, the Darian Blancos to get one steal. Bet on the team. Don't bet on the player if most of the players are kind of wild cards anyway when it comes to steals, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense. Someone actually asked me on Twitter, Renjifo, 40-plus stolen bases. I responded, I mean, honestly, I think where he lands, probably like in the 30, 33 range, something like that.
Probably 30. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we'll be shocked at the pace at which he's running. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising. It would be wonderful, but I don't know. I think that's about fair.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, 40 would be amazing, but it's not something you should bet on. I mean, 30 is still pretty aggressive, all things being equal. We've seen guys who run in different things, and I think the one thing the Angels have going for them is it doesn't seem like there's any reason – to your point, is success rate isn't mattering. So it's fantasy baseball, not real baseball. That's how the Angels want to play it. Fine. Mm-hmm. You know?
And they're going to lose a lot of games. I'm pretty sure they're going to
finish. They are losing games.
Yeah, they are. I'm pretty sure they're going to finish ahead of the A's in the standings. If they don't, I wouldn't be surprised, but I just feel like I don't know. I just think they'll be, you know, they won't be as bad as the White Sox, and I still think the A's will be worse, but like there's fantasy value on this team. And even think back to last season with all the struggles within the rotation and Trout being out, Ward out for a chunk of the season. Like they were still among the league leaders in team home runs. They were one of the few teams over 200. And so they do have some bats here, and keep in mind, Brandon Drury will come back at some point.
I think that's what makes the torture extra special. You know, it wouldn't be as good a torture if it was just all bad all the time. Even with how awful this year is, they're still losing games that they should win and games that they're not supposed to be able to compete in the first place. Like, oh, I don't know, tonight, you know, yep. They were in the game, you know?
So. Yeah. I mean, hey, listen, you're up against Christian Javier. You got off to a, you know, nice little lead, and then, I mean, that goes to the stat. I don't want to spend the whole time talking about Angels because I wanted to get into the starting rotation. But I mean, really, what is there to talk about here? It's like, you could start Griffin, you know, you can pick up Griffin Canning for like a nice looking two-step on paper. Maybe you should probably expect Reed Detmers to turn it around right when everyone drops him. Patrick Sandoval, you don't know what you're going to get from start to start. Jose Soriano looks good, and Tyler Anderson is outperforming his metrics so much that if there's a couple of more of these type of starts and you pick him up, you'll probably be holding the bag. Does this sound about right about this rotation?
I have nothing further to comment on. That's a pretty accurate assessment of everything.
All right, then let's get to the fun stuff, specifically the fab that might happen here with the Angels pen, because that's the next wonky one. Mm-hmm. You know, our guy Rob Bohr, I'm sure he's on the scene and he's on it. He's going to have his article come out on Thursday, the Bullpen Report, but I have just been noticing that Carlos Estevez has been his usual shaky self. His ERA is now over 5. I know he blew the game today. It was not an earned run, but nevertheless, earlier today, I saw a quote from Ron Washington saying, hey, he's still our guy. I'm not worried about him, blah, blah, blah. But at some point, he's going to have to, if this keeps up, if this is like your, you know, unless he kind of turns his ship around like he did for a chunk last year and just, you know, tightens up, Washington's hands will be forced. And there's really no one there, right? So like at some point this weekend, we're going to be looking at maybe considering a closer bid on Angels guy. And man, are we like in 2017 here? Because like Hunter Strickland is now the next man up. Is that what's going on?
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of think that more of a gut call, but I kind of think Luis Garcia would be more likely to see save chances than Strickland. I don't know. I kind of look at Strickland as he's been there so many times before. It's why not try something new? I mean, he's not really got any different skills, so doesn't miss enough bats, in my opinion, to be a guy to put in a closer. Estevez is done. I don't know why they keep doing it. Just give up already, you know?
And it's interesting because we were looking at it when we were drafting in draft champion season. It was, you know, people for the most part taking Estevez, okay, if he's there, or some people were just avoiding him outright for his sort of later ADP for a closer. But then people were drafting, I remember I was drafting Jose Soriano because we figured he was kind of the next man up. Of course, he's now in the rotation. But then when Matt Moore signed, we're like, oh, wow, well, he had a great season last year. I understand he's a lefty, but like, you know, maybe he gets some save ops. But Matt Moore's been horrible. He's got like a 7+ ERA this season. So I don't know what's going on there.
I don't know. I think I guess it depends on, isn't that usually the pattern? The manager says he's still our guy. That means the next blown save, he's not our guy. So if that pattern continues, which, I mean, there's no reason it shouldn't. I don't know, maybe 20, 30 bucks on Garcia or Strickland at most, if nobody knows. So
and then one of them.
What'd you say?
But then if one of them gets a save on Sunday, then it's game over. Then people are going to be overspending.
Well, yeah, that would be something that I think might be an overreaction because we don't even know if it'd be one guy versus the other. So that's what I'm saying. For me, even if a guy got two saves would be the difference maker. But if one of the guys got one save, I think that just makes him a 30 to 40 at most bid, and the other guy being, you know, maybe 5 to 15 or something. But maybe that's even too much. Because I think if nothing happens in between now and then, it'll just be a buck or two. No?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes the most sense. And then just in general, like this division, maybe stepping away from fantasy for a second, it's really funny how 2 weeks ago I was seeing articles about all the potential guys that the Astros are going to trade because they're out of it. And I'm thinking, what? It's like at the beginning of May? And I understand we're not used to seeing them with this massive losing record, but like they're going to be okay. I think they're going to be okay, right? Like Alex Bregman is, you know, he's not just toast. He's not just done. Kyle Tucker is basically like the best player in, you know, hitter in baseball, not named Ohtani, I feel like, or at least the, you know, top guy in the AL or up there. And Yordan's has been cold. He'll get going at some point. And you know, and even the rotation, like that starting pitching rotation, I was looking at it before one of my articles I was writing. I'm like, wait a second. The Astros have like the third worst ERA in baseball. Like it was crazy. It was so like not Astro-like. Like obviously Hunter Brown had a lot to do with that. But even Verlander, like, you know, a couple of great starts and then boom, gives up like, you know, a bunch of earned runs, very unpredictable. But either way, like, I feel like this is just going to be a to the wire for all these for these three teams, Seattle, the Texas Rangers, and the Houston Astros. Like, sure, there'll be a few game difference here and there, but like Seattle has been horrendous offensively. They're just basically on, you know, on their pitcher stream, just unbelievable. Rangers are even like one game under 500. It's pretty crazy. And then the Astros are, you know, whatever, 9 of their last 12, I think they've won. So, yeah, how do you see things playing out here? You think I'm right on my assessment? It'll be close, or do you think one team kind of falls off?
I still think that Houston will run away with it. I think that because the other teams haven't pulled away, and Houston's, if I'm not mistaken, in the past week or so, they've been pretty white hot hitting wise.
Yeah,
Yeah. And they're still getting some of their guys healthy, even if it's just, you know, more arms, more volume. I mean, that was part of the reason they signed Hader, right? In theory, that they were going to shorten up the starters as much as possible because of all the injuries that they've had. So I still think that they probably, I don't know. Texas seems to be, it's a wild card, but I think Houston wins the division. I actually think they win it pretty easily.
Yeah. And it's just still so early to be been, you know, looking, thinking about rankings and stuff. By the way, the Astros, they're getting Renel Blanco back. He's back from suspension. Jose Urquidy's coming back, which means you can probably drop all your Spencer Urquidy's.
I will not drop my Spencer. He got me two wins the one week I have him, and he should have had a better line. He should have had a much better line that day. I was screaming at the TV because of the manager should have given Abreu a clean inning. Like, I know what I'm talking about, but I was bitter.
Oh, then Texas, by the way, they signed, remember this, a blast from the past, Derek Hill of Detroit Tiger fame. He, of course, jumps into the lineup in his first game against a lefty, which is what he does. Steals a base. That's kind of what it is. So they have these, like, this weird outfield platoon of Travis Jankowski and Derek Hill. It's just very un-Ranger-like. And I know Adelis Garcia is banged up, but they got Robbie Grossman on the team. Like, their rookies are underperforming. Another one's hurt with Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford. It's just like a weird makeup. It's like super top heavy as well.
Yeah. I feel like there should be an outfield of Travis Jankowski, Kevin Pillar. I forget what the other random journeyman you said was of all those three guys. Derek Hill. Yeah. I mean, those guys just always pop up. But back to the Pillar point. Of all these guys that have heaters, this is actually pretty impressive by journeyman heater standards. So
it's, it's incredible. Yeah. Like, I just don't see, you know, like, I don't see Robbie Grossman on going on a similar type thing. Both these guys are.
That's what I was thinking. Robbie Grossman. Yeah.
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 And then the rotation is just weird, by the way. So right now, well, Dane Dunning's coming back. John Gray in his start against the Phillies actually had some growing tightness. Hopefully he's okay. They signed Michael Lorenzen. They got Jose Urania right now in this rotation, and then the ever inconsistent Andrew Heaney. So it's just a very weird thing. And then if you want to compare like best IL'd rotations in the league, like we know about Tampa, right? You know, like Baz, McClanahan, Springs, you know, Rasmussen. You got the same thing with the Dodgers and all their guys, you know, Kershaw, Bobby Miller, et cetera, et cetera. Look at this group. It's Cody Bradford. He's actually shut down. Looks like he's going to be a while. Dane Dunning's coming back, as we mentioned. Nathan Eovaldi will be back sometime soon. Tyler Malley is maybe back in the second half, recovering from Tommy John. Max Scherzer had the the back surgery, and then now he's dealing with something with his thumb. And then Jacob deGrom, we haven't heard about anything since.
That's a really impressive guys that are some of the most consistently – I will be on the IL for a certain period of time every single year, guys. I mean, you kind of hit the all-stars of whatever that was. I mean, every one of those guys. I haven't heard anything on Scherzer, by the way. That's a little disconcerting. I thought he was going to be back by the end of May, but
he was, and then he in one of his rehab starts had a something with his thumb, and then was slowed down. Oh, so he was moved to the 60-day.
Yeah, it's just a procedural. There's been nothing since. Oh, it's just a thumb thing. So I haven't read anything that since then that would suggest. It's no way to know if it's minor or not minor, which, you know, no news is bad news in that sense, I think. So, but I mean, that's the problem with the Rangers, in my opinion. There's no matter how many guys they've had, they're all hurt. I mean, honestly, at this rate, it wouldn't surprise me if DeGrom is the first guy back. I mean, it's that's kind of one of the reasons, even with Houston's injuries, that I think Houston I actually think Urquidy is going to stick around. I don't think they're going to bump him. So.
And on that note, so you're talking about the Astros running away, but we didn't even talk about the elephant in the room that happens to be leading the division. I mean, are you already counting out the Seattle Mariners that have the most ridiculous starting rotation ever seen? The most insane dominant closer in Andrés Muñoz, who's just like hot fire right now, and the most underperforming offense in baseball. Like Luke Rayleigh is literally carrying this team right now. And this kind of transfers over into our next topic. We were going to talk about the most, just a couple of players who we think are kind of like the most overrated fantasy players. But I did, and this came up with just thinking about Julio Rodriguez. But before, you know, kind of mention Julio specifically, I wanted to mention that the Mariners, who lead the AL West, they lead the league, their offense leads the league in strikeouts. So they're like on a record-setting pace for strikeouts. Their strikeout rate as a team is 28%. They're bottom seven in runs scored. And even the Marlins have scored more runs than the division-leading Mariners. So just go figure that out. And so this is just in relation to, this is not me saying Julio's overrated, whatnot, but just like think about where we were in draft season, where it was like, you know, not everybody was taking Julio second. A lot of people preferred Witt. I remember in a draft, I think I took Witt second in one. I took Julio third in another. But like the difference between the two, I feel like Bobby Witt did more on this Tuesday than Julio Rodriguez has done over the last 3 weeks. And just for context here, Julio Rodriguez only has two home runs. He's got teens RBI and runs. And I just kind of paced it out. And of course, the pacing is not always a great exercise. I think it's very trappy. But right now, if you're just sort of to pace out Julio Rodriguez for the rest of the season, it's 59 runs, 7 homer,
wow,
49 RBI, and 29 stolen bases. And, you know, he's hitting 274.
2 months
ago. Bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, do you remember people had no problem clicking on Julio Rodriguez, a 35-35 darling, over like Mookie Betts, who we knew was hitting ahead of Otani and Freeman. Like, can't speak for everyone, but like
you could have hit on Carroll, and then you'd have your hope would already be crushed. So you're already have thrown your hands up in the air. Whereas at least with Julio, it's not the same thing.
So maybe. First, like, okay, so the conversation about him versus Witt, I mean, it's already pacing way off. It just, you know, hey, listen, Witt's going to blow him away, Betts, all these guys, whatever. If he pulls off first round value return, that means he's going to have the hottest 4 months in baseball right now, which doesn't kind of feel like it's happening. Like, he will have some hot months, he'll get there. We remember how slow he started his first 2 years, but I think it's safe to say, we're not going to want to call him a full out bust, but like, for first round value, that'll be tough. But just in general, how do you feel about Julio Rodriguez rest of the season? Just kind of looking at his, you know, higher strikeout rate and everything. You think he'll be okay? Like, when does he get hot?
I mean, at least he has a track record of doing this now, to your point. It took a little longer for him to get hot last year, though, wasn't it? He wasn't as bad as he was this year, but wasn't it not until late July that he picked it up last year? Or was it earlier?
Yeah, I know it was definitely earlier than late July. Okay. I mean, he had his hot streaks, but he wasn't like this bad, like, you know, 19, you know, 14 RBIs through his first 50 games.
Yeah. That part of that is the team context, but I think he'll be fine. I'm not fazed by it. I just have no idea. I mean, knowing that guy, he'll break the record for, you know, something in the second half just because he'll somehow find a way to be where he is. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, he's a freak. And the better question is Acuna, because of I saw that one stat with him that jumped out, that his strikeout rate last year compared to every other year now is like sticks out like an insane amount. I had to double take when I saw that stat. So I mean, what do you think about Acuna?
Man, that's a good question. I think what I thought in the preseason, like obviously I didn't think he was. I think this offense outside of Ozuna is just they're just not there, right? Like Ozzy Albies was hurt, he's got a couple of home runs. Michael Harris has been struggling, albeit he hit a home run on Tuesday. Matt Olson's starting to pick things up a little bit. Austin Riley should have been put on the IL. like, it's weird to see this group struggling because we're just kind of not used to it. Like, they're just not that cohesive unit, and there's still so much time. I think they'll get going in the summer. Obviously Acuna's pacing for, you know, same stolen base he had last year. At some point, he will figure things out on the hitting side. I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's, I think if you like you had a draft today, I think maybe only 15% of people would even take it. I don't know. Maybe I didn't think this through, But you just kind of hit me on the spot with it. I don't think most.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
No. I mean, like, no, me, I'm like thinking out loud here.
Oh, okay.
I don't think Acuna would be the first. He's not like the consensus for sure, but I feel like, you know, if you drafted a week ago, most people would be taking Ohtani or Ellie first, but he's like top three. Does that sound about fair?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just think it's funny that the group psychology that what Ohtani is doing this year, it's still not crazy different than last year. I mean, he put up a crazy bonker season last year hitting, and it's, well, why did he go at the end of the first round? You know, it's once you get to these top elite guys, I really do think it's just a matter of preference and markets and things like that versus, you know, it's deck chairs to a certain degree. I think so. I mean, because right now you look at it and be, it's like, how did we not have Ohtani Betts as the 1-2 all along? It's easier to say that now. So,
well, if you remember, that's what got me drafting, actually. Right. So usually I'll start drafting my draft champions sometime around Thanksgiving. And I actually started a little earlier than that because I was seeing Ohtani go consistently in the 15-16 range, you know, overall at the end of the first or early second. So I'm going 18. I was like, I need to get in some drafts right now. This feels wrong. He's like a middle of the first round guy for me, and he wasn't signed yet by the Dodgers, but I knew. I mean, it was happening. He was going to LA. So that's kind of what got in. So he was my first pick of this season because I drew a 15 pick on purpose. I got him there, nice. And then, you know, on and on. But yeah, I mean, listen, we could talk about these first rounders all day, but so we talked about Julio. Wanted to just like mention, and you know, is there anybody that to you who you feel like this is the reason why I bring this up, and this is a topic here is overrated fantasy players, because I feel like sometimes, you know, like you get the New York bias, like if someone's a Yankee or Met, they get a little extra love, whatever. But I'm seeing like a certain guy who I could be dead wrong on. Maybe I'm just stubborn because I have no shares. But like, and I'm sorry if I'm offending you. You love this man, but like Christopher Morel, and hear me out here. I know he's a big power guy. He's a 30 homer, 10 stolen base guy easily. Blah blah blah. 15% barrel rate last year, 12% this year. Even his expected metrics are like way ahead of, you know, for example, his slugging percentage is .413. His expected is .515 or something like that. So it's like, you know, there's no reason to not be into Christopher Morel. Now, my issue is the player that fits the prototype of somebody that usually has a high strikeout rate. He used to be a 30% guy. He's you know, reduced that. He's down to 20 so far this year, but he's hitting .216 right now. He had .240 the last 2 years. And I understand that it's going to be Wrigley, middle of the hot summer and stuff like that. He might hit 40 home runs for all we know. But to me, that player profile, I feel, gets overrated. And then if you put them in like a New York, Chicago, LA, it's even more magnified. So, so for me, I think he's just kind of overrated because he's a real life favorite. Like everyone loves Christopher Morel. And to me, I'm afraid, maybe not now, but he'll eventually turn into like the Eugenio Suarez, Muncie, Schwarber type. And I hate those guys that kill your batting average.
Do we include Jack Suwinski in that group, or is he not good enough yet?
I mean, he's rostered in 15 teamers. I guess he's in that mix. He already had.
What'd you say?
Jack Suwinski. I just did a run of like the lowest batting averages since the beginning of 2022. So that's like what, almost 2.5 years. And he's like fourth lowest in baseball. It's like Trent Grisham, then Max Muncy. Grisham's the only one under 200. Then it's like Muncy 203, and Suwinski's like right around there. So he just had that hot, what it was like the three hottest weeks ever, and then had another three hot week span. And that's pretty much was a season.
That's true. No, that's true. Yeah. I'll put you on the spot on one if you're buying. What about Brett Rooker?
I have a little like soft spot. I don't know. I mean, buying, like, you know, it's a context driven question. Like for me, I bought him where I could in OCs 2 weeks ago because I needed power, and that's what he does. And do I think he's like a 270, 280 hitter? No, of course not. We saw what he did like beginning of last year when he first got hot and then just completely fell off the map. I foresee that happening again this year for sure. But what
you don't
I
think he
doing,
can be a 250 hitter?
250? Yeah. He could be a 250. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Just not like the 280 to, you know, whatever we're seeing. Because that's exactly what happened last year, beginning of the season, just like off the chains and then just, you know, fell off. But he's not like a new guy all of a sudden. This is like the same cyclical Brent Rooker rotation. It sounds to me like you love him. Did I just hurt your player?
A little bit. I'll be okay.
Tell me why. Tell me what you think.
I don't know. The thing I'll say for Rooker is why I'm buying in now is, you know, the expected batting average still looks okay. So that's the best they can come up with. No, there's no reason to think it's any different. But man, when he hits them though, he drills them though. It's fun to watch though. The whole team is fun to watch right now.
Yeah, it's weird. Like kind of, you know, rooting for him, like the Abraham Toro leading off every single day. Mason Miller blowing people away. Yeah, he just wished they had different ownership. But hey, if we start thinking about ownership and things like that with fantasy, I know you probably do with Artie, with the Angels, but like then it just skews it. Like I feel like life is too short to worry so much about those things. Just enjoy the game, enjoy the fantasy. Don't think about the stupid owners.
Well, and that's part of the fun, right? It's we love the highs, we love the lows. Sports is an event, it's an outlet to complain, and you know, it's part of the fun. Anything but boring, right? So not saying I love that you know, Angels have all the nonsense, but it's entertaining, you know. It's what it's all about at the end of the day, you know.
What's really entertaining, by the way, is Dodgers. It's really fun to be a fan, man. Let me tell you, I talked about it on the episode a couple weeks ago.
How about it?
You know, just going, like being at the stadium. Again, listen, you, I'm not bragging here because we haven't won, you know, we won one championship that most people don't think is even real anyways in the COVID year since I was a kid, since 88. So all y'all are having the last laugh, but you know, let us enjoy this. We'll see when we get there. You know, remember my prediction was eventually, they'll lose to the Pirates and you know, that'll, you know, NLCS or something like that.
So one question on that though, I want to ask you, talking about kind of, you know, what can this Dodger team accomplish? I think it's possible that before the end of the year, they are considered to be one of the most hated teams, at least by everybody else. What are you
I'm
talking
not
about?
My bubble
Nobody
here.
Likes the Dodgers.
What?
But, Nobody likes the Dodgers.
But it's we. It's man. I understand. It's because it's where I'm at. But I don't.
It's jealousy. It's jealousy.
True, but like, but people don't hate Mookie Betts. You can't hate Freddie Freeman. Really.
But that's the point. Nobody hates Ohtani. Nobody hates Freeman.
No, a lot of people hate Ohtani. I don't want to say hate, but they're like rooting for his downfall. Like I know.
Okay, well, they have their own issues that they should take care of with that. But I'm just saying that like people don't hate the players. They hate the team.
Understood.
What the team represents. You know, it's I'll give it from my perspective because you know that I love to hate. Which is that you see people saying, look at Yamamoto, comparing him to this. It's like, it's so easy to say, you guys spent $1 billion on those two players. You know, there's just so many ways to capture it. You know, it's easy to get jealous, you know, when you're the king and you're the crown. And in this case, it's doing everything and spending everything to give them the best team, which is how it should be. You know, they've got the crown on that and everybody, you know, is jealous and wishes their team did that. And, you know, you know, everybody likes rooting for the underdog and the Dodgers are now Goliath, right? I mean, that's why.
How much is, what is your analysis on Dave Roberts and his effect on the team and how you grade him as a manager? And of course the word is, oh, he's the puppet of, you know, front office, this and that, you just do what you tell him. But like, at the end of the day, he's still making, you know, calls on the field or whatnot. But I don't know. I feel like he's cost us big in the past. I don't know. Like, or maybe he's just good at keeping, you know, group together. But at the end of the day, if we haven't won, what's it worth? So I don't even know what my question is. Like, what
no, I know what you're saying. Being like, does he make a difference? Like, can anything basically prevent them from underachieving? Because if they are, can we get rid of it and change it? Or at least that's how I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a he doesn't have a great track record relative to the success that he's had. I mean, to be fair, he's had a lot of pitching injuries and things like that. But I don't know. I think I'll reserve judgment because this year really stands out as far as the amount of commitments, you know, really going after both Ohtani and Yamamoto and Glasnow. I think those three, it will be hard pressed to see them not make a move, I think, or not become a, you know, perennial hot seat if the Dodgers don't at the very least make it to the World Series this year. I mean, you're a Dodger fan. Do you agree with that? Or do you see it differently that, oh, he'd just be a scapegoat?
I mean, he's every year after we lose, or as I see it happening, kind of like a, you know, a fab bid before you bid on him, like the week in advance thing. It's I'm seeing this not happen when it really matters. And I understand exactly. Things happen to Kershaw at the wrong time, but I don't know. There's something about him that I'm not a fan of. I feel like I don't know who the right guy is to kind of make it all happen. But I do wonder if it doesn't all come together this year. I don't think there'll be another year. I think at some point those close ties need to be cut. They need to move on. So
we haven't found a way to measure and quantify a manager's choking and making decisions yet and leading the team. It's hard to value a manager for all those qualitative reasons. So it's always funny when you discuss managers. I mean, I hated Socha for the longest time. I thought he was a terrible manager for the, you know, what was it, the first half of the decade. And now I'm like, I don't think any of that mattered. So I really don't know what to think when it comes to managers. So yeah, I think usually they're just the guys there to take the fall when somebody needs to take a fall in a lot of ways.
Well, someone's going to have to need to take the fall for not playing Miguel Vargas, because I think that's an absolute joke. And I swear, it's not just homerism.
I agree. Miguel
Vargas would be, if you played him every day, an above average hitter in the league. He got a bad rap. We saw exactly everything he's been doing in the minor leagues this year and previous years. It's not by accident. And you remember beginning of last season, he got hit on the hand or whatever.
Yeah.
And basically was told not to swing. Remember, he was even in like regular season games and just taking walks. He somehow kept taking walks, even though the pitchers knew he wasn't going to swing. And like,
yeah.
And then he wasn't healthy. He didn't get in his rhythm, and he got sent down, struggled, got sent down. He just got a bad draw, really. And so now, you know, you bring him back up, and then like, you're still going to play like, you got to play this. They have to play this, man. Let him get some at bats.
You know, call it the, you got to let him Adele, you know, you got to let these guys, you know, Joe Adele proves that when it comes to the blue chippers, you know, and know the guys that put in the work, it can happen at any time. So it's kind of like, why would you not take your chances? Why would you not put him out there and let him see if he hits? So I'm in full agreement with you. It's like, he was the number one prospect for a reason. And it's never, we say it a million times, obviously it's way overused, but it's never linear, which means don't approach it linear, which means give him a chance when he's hot, you know, let him go. I mean, it just seems stupid sometimes. I mean, I don't know if
money isn't an issue, then just cut your losses on that 25 mil that you owe Chris Taylor and get his sorry ass off the roster. I mean, my goodness, I thank you for your heroics a couple years ago and all, but like, it's time to move on, dude. You're like 3 for 70 on the year or whatever it is. It's time to move on. Let's get somebody who I think is honestly I'm not drinking my own Kool-Aid here. I'm not saying he's an elite contact hitter, but he's definitely upper shelf. Like, he's a guy that I think would hit 280 consistently. Call him like, you know, like more than Howie Kendrick, because Howie Kendrick wasn't even all that fantasy.
Well, what did we say last year? He should have hit 280, 15 homers, 80 RBIs, 10 to 15 mm-hmm. steals, right? Mm-hmm. If we thought, it makes more sense that it would happen now. Got a lot of his failures out of the way. He's doing better.
Yeah, let him play.
Let him play. I agree.
Last one here. I just want to throw out one guy who I think is, I just want to just like give him props, give him his due. Just an underrated player. I feel like, maybe, I don't know. And probably in Philly, they love him, I'm sure. I feel like maybe the fantasy community is only like in the last like few months really recognizing this, but Alec Bohm is incredible. He is a really, really, really good hitter. He's like, I think second in RBI right now. He like pretty much almost drove in 100, runs last season, like pretty much like in his sleep, like without many of the home runs. And because he isn't a big power guy, I feel like he gets overlooked. And I was just thinking back to this fantasy season. And after I, as I was working through the VDP projections, like he just kept popping up. One of the few guys that I have over 285, 285 batting average.
I think you should victory lap the, out of this one. Because I remember, doing my own ranks, doing my own drafts, and I actually had a draft where I was between him and Ke'Bryan Hayes around, I want to say it was the middle of the 11th round. And I ended up going with Alec Bohm. And I did it because of combination of where he hits in the lineup in the team context versus Hayes. And the fact that when I looked at the VDP, it was really, really, really bullish on the average. And he's not a guy. He was one of those guys that a lot of people look at, and just kind of on the surface says, why are we bidding on putting Alec Bohm in top 150 and Josh Bell in the top 300? What's the difference? Didn't seem like I read anybody wanting to push him up. So like I said, take that victory lap. It's a good one.
And especially I remember, Ke'Bryan Hayes was like, he was through the roof, man. Like, I mean, listen, that could still work out, but he's not going to be Alec Bohm this year for sure. He was getting pushed up high, Ke'Bryan Hayes, like 120, 130, like everyone's on the Pittsburgh train with O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds. By the way, I haven't heard a thing about Brian Reynolds, but Alec Bohm, when you're in a tiebreaker, worst things considered, all things even, take the player on the Phillies, take the player on the Astros.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you also, got a guy? What'd you say?
Do you have a guy, one underrated?
Oh, underrated guy still on the, I was going to go with Rooker.
Oh, that's fine. You still can. He's underrated.
What? Yeah. I just think that, this is kind of his second go at it. And he doesn't really, in my opinion, he looks like he's gotten a little bit better. I think things are a little bit better. And I think if he was truly looked at as a 250 hitter, I mean, you said yourself, he's a 250er. If he hits 250 to 260, he's like Chris Davis 2.0, but a little bit better. Because he doesn't have that same, what was the average? 242, 246. Can't remember.
Record last year.
No, the with Chris Davis when he hit the
it was like 241 or something every year,
something like that. Yeah. So I'm just saying that Rooker is going to get you 40 home runs if I'm right, and it's legit, and that's basically puts him as a definitely, I think, around a top 100 pick.
Yes, that'll go with
a couple. I don't know if you agree with that, but
the more you look into it a little bit, barrel rates in the 15% range, similar to last year, hit rate, elite 50%. His expected metrics all in line so far. Again, that can go off, but like a 281 average, 276 XBA, not bad. He's hitting the ball at harder than he did last year. Even he was average 91.5 miles per hour. This year is at 92.5. His max EV is higher, launch angle slightly higher. I don't think that makes much of a difference between 17 versus 19, degrees. All in all, he hit 30 last year in just 520 at plate appearances, striking out the same 32%. But he's at 11 home runs. Yeah, I like it. That's a good call. 250 with another 30 bombs. And
he could hit 40. He could hit 40. I mean, it's possible.
He could get traded to the Jason Dominguez thing doesn't work out. He gets, reset. Giancarlo Stanton falls apart, blah, blah, blah. Then they need somebody. There you go. Trade for Brent Rooker. Anything else as we close up here? I know we kind of caught you here on the East Coast, super late night, so I didn't get your like full surliest. I know we're both kind of falling
asleep. I'm sorry I disappointed you, man.
No disappointing at all, but like anything else before we close out the show or anything you want to advertise?
Oh, no, I do want to say I did officially for the one person or maybe there's two, maybe my dad's listening. I don't know. But the I did change my Twitter handle to Surly Attorney. So appreciate that.
Hey, all right.
I was gonna do the Surly Attorney. I go, don't push your luck, asshole. So that was like, I figured Surly Attorney was, you know, that's enough. I'm gonna crawl before I can walk, before I can run like a schmuck. So that was one thing I celebrated of no significance. But no, the only other thing I was gonna add is a lesson that I keep trying to tell myself. I was thinking about it when I was listening to Todd. Is no matter how many times I tell myself to not be killed the death by a million $15, $20 fab bids, I still continue to do it. And so the one thing that I'm really trying to tell myself is talk about thinking out loud. I'm like external processing on the spot.
That's what we're doing. That's what it is.
Okay. is that like, it is such a hard bias to overcome. And it's almost like I'm coming up with a thought as I'm doing it. When I do my fab prep this week, I almost want to purposely not do a single waterfall with a bid over 10 to start, maybe to kind of set a foundation to make me not more likely to move things up and down. Cause I still end up having way too many $20 bids. And I'm sure I've blown, you know, the equivalent of $200 in fab when I shouldn't have already. So.
Well, I can even help you here on the spot. So if we're just looking at, for example, you know, a couple of things I would think of. So like, say we're looking at a group like, you say, Jesse Winker is available in yours. Okay. Helnick starts to get a little hot. Chris Bryant maybe, you know, had a few hits or hit a home run or something. He's now on the map and he's there in a 15-teamer. Joey Meneses keeps heating up and say he has a hot schedule. So you got all those guys and then a few of the like, the stragglers, maybe like Pilar's still there, whatever, but he's cooled off. So you've got like, you need an outfielder like for the week and you've identified 9 outfielders that you want. Then you want to look back. I feel like you want to look back at the bid history and even of like who, how do I put this? I feel like in a case like that, you could have your one guy that you really want and then the rest, you can all make them all single digit bids. And in fact, if you have a waterfall of like 10 guys, your last 5 or 6 can just be a buck or two. Good chance you'll probably get one of them. And you can, you know, I go down to even deciding whether I'll go a buck or two, right? Like even, for example, if it's like a really whatever catcher, but I just know someone else might need a catcher as well because say they just lost Wilson Contreras or whatever. Like if I wanted Corey Lee this week and I know the secondary options all stink, I'll go that extra buck. Like I'll go with 3 instead of a 2 because 2, right, I'll probably tie, you know, 1 I'll lose for sure, especially if I'm higher up in the standings. But like, yeah, man, this I love this stuff. It's just so much. We could just constantly, you know, think about it, talk about it, just like fab strategy alone. But like, I feel like we can win a lot more of these single, you know, digit bids. And that's a good way to eliminate this excess spend.
That's good advice. Appreciate it.
Dan Preppis, ladies and gentlemen, you should follow him not at the Surly Attorney, but just at Surly Attorney, and that's S-U-R-L-Y Attorney. So, Dan, thank you so much for coming on. I wish you lots of luck from now until the All-Star break and then after the All-Star break. So, for Todd Whitestone, who came on earlier, for Dan Preppis, and for my regular co-host, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll